Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your humble host, PK, and we're back here at Third Stream View on Monday, April 18th, 2011. Unfortunately, my scheduled guest couldn't make it tonight because she's rather under the weather. Had the flu-like symptoms and the whole fever thing going on, so I'm sure a lot of you know what that's like. And that would have been Karen Kwiatkowski, who was a former Air Force officer, and she was in the Pentagon, excuse me, when 9/11 hit. And she's a fellow libertarian, a fan of the Mises Institute, and she has a good inside view and opinions about the workings of the neocons in the Pentagon and how they helped bring us to war and their whole little clique. So unfortunately, she couldn't make it this week, and hopefully she'll be with us next week. But I am here tonight, and we'll be talking about different things, including my favorable movie review of Atlas Shrugged. As always, I welcome all of your calls, questions, debate. As always, thank you to bbsradio.com for supporting free speech. And I sure have a lot of it here. And so they're always to be commended about that. Thank goodness for alternative media and internet radio and for the internet. And I hope that schmuck Lieberman, Senator Lieberman, Israel's most popular, famous senator, never gets his way to be able to shut down the internet at a whim, nor any other politicians of any stripe, because that is something we don't need, because nowadays news travels like that across the world. Had we had the internet last century, say 100 years ago, there still may have been American entry into foreign wars, but there would have been a lot of information out there about what's really going on, and hopefully there would have been a lot of good people to try to stem the tide and not let this sort of thing happen. So, again, thank goodness for internet radio, because all the major networks, CBS, ABC, NPR, talk radio, Fox News, CNN, they're all that controlled corporate media. They're all part of the globalist agenda, very Zionist in scope and very pro-Israel. And so it's really hard to break through that opinion cartel. So that's why internet radio and alternative media is so important, and it's growing quite a bit. And I'm glad to be part of it. So that's something that we should all be glad and thankful for. And I hope it's not disrupted. In fact, I didn't know this till a few years ago, but during World War I, before America's entry, tragic entry, the British cut the underseas telegraph lines from Europe to the U.S. However, they did not cut the underseas telegraph lines from Britain to the U.S. So consequently, the U.S. got mainly British propaganda. And America was overwhelmingly against the war. They were probably more sympathetic to the German side. But through wartime propaganda, Britain was able to bring America over to their side, as were the Zionist bankers in Germany who switched sides, which is one of the reasons Hitler said the Jews stabbed Germany in the back. Well, to be more specific, it would have been the Zionist Jews, the Zionist bankers. Come forward to today, they're still the power structure, the Rothschild Zionist banking cartel in league with the Rockefellers and all of their combined minions. And that is how I see the global power structure. And these are the globalists. The globalists would, of course, be the Bushes, Clintons, Obama. These are willing people to carry the water for the globalists as they stay obscured in the background, the Rothschild and the Rockefeller interests, the Morgan interests. This includes the Federal Reserve, the military-industrial complex. So, yes, the Bushes and the Obamas, the Clintons, they will retire wealthy. They're already wealthy. They'll have their wealth, which is nothing compared to the masters they serve. But they are the, the front line, I guess, for the globalists, the New World Order crowd. And this crowd is not pro-free enterprise, per se. They're pro-business. We Ron Paul Republicans and libertarians and free traders, we're for free trade, which doesn't mean government-managed trade. We oppose NAFTA, World Trade Organization, all these globalist creations that force us to do business with them their way. This is not true free enterprise. I've spoken about this before, and I keep mentioning it because one has to be consistent about this. And since I'm a drummer, I tie this into drums because all good drummers are consistent. So I consistently repeat these facts about free enterprise and how it's been perverted, the perversion of capitalism with bailouts and subsidies and corporate welfare, protectionism, all these things. And this ties into the fact that I was very happy to see the premiere of Atlas Shrugged when it came out last Friday. And I really enjoyed the movie. Sure, it had a few flaws. Even I do, but just like the movie, not many. But anyway, of course, the left and the statists of all stripes, socialists of all stripes, you know, they fired on it. The status quo, I read a lot of negative ads, reviews, but a lot of positive ones. So the masses, the people, they get it. I wish that Rand and even the movie went into it a little bit more, like I've just mentioned about how businessmen, or at least the businessmen that Rand portrayed favorably, were businessmen who had integrity. They did not seek privilege and wealth from the state being politically connected. They achieved their wealth by earning it through the marketplace. And that's where I'm going with this conversation, and that's where Rand went to. One second. Okay, world, I'm back. So what Rand, I wish he would have more clearly delineated, and maybe in the movie too, was that Rand was opposed to corporate welfare and bailouts and corporate socialism. And I'm not a staunch objectivist. You could say that I'm a Randian because I believe in a lot of her concepts. And she taught me about individualism, rugged individualism, having integrity, not that I didn't have it already, but she solidified some of the views. She gave me more focus on things I believed anyway, that she put more into perspective. And that's my message of, my constant message of today and yesterday and the future, that the corporate statists, corporate fascists, the corporate socialists like ML from General Electric and, you know, businessmen, be they, usually they're big businessmen, you know, Archer Daniel Midland's, the agribusiness, big pharma, pharmacology, who are tied into government for government privilege and promoting government exclusion of competitors. Those are the people that Rand despised, and I do too. And I wish that the people who reviewed the movie negatively realize this, that we abhor crony capitalism and political privilege. These are things that bring down a country, and you can see it happening right now. And I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. I liked the characters. I liked the character of Hank Reardon and Dagny Taggart, the gal that played her. I enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to part two and part three. I really enjoy the intro, especially the opening, when you see society collapsing and you know, industry idle and all this unemployment. And it's so prescient for today when you see what's going on, because the unemployment rate is much higher than they tell us that it is. I mean, look around you, more stores closing. And again, the reason for this, the main source of this, is the Federal Reserve System. And they're under the gun, and they don't like it, and they don't want to be audited. And the government doesn't want Fort Knox to be audited. They don't want to know. They don't want us to know as to the inventory of gold stock, gold bars, and the quality of the gold. And is it real? Is there any fake stuff going on? Is there any hanky-panky going on? You know, what is going on here? You saw what's going on 2 weeks ago, that the Fed, I think they issued like a 29,000 pages of what they've been up to. I mean, lending money to foreign banks and bailing out people you never heard of and, you know, doing all sorts of things with our money that should not only stay in our country, but the value of it shouldn't be steadily eroded and destroyed by the Fed with its $1 trillion in money creation, which they do, I guess, electronically now. But as we start seeing the prices creeping up of food and petrol, gasoline, for you folks who don't know what petrol is. But yes, I predicted it. Austrian Economics predicted it. We can't tell you exactly when it's going to happen, but we know the causes and the reasons why. And those reasons and causes are coming into fruition now. They're talking about $5 a gallon gas on the horizon. Well, a lot of that, as we've said before, is inflation. Because, as I understand it, the price of oil is pretty consistent in terms of the gold price. It's that foreign producers know that the dollar is worth a lot less, so it takes more dollars to buy that gallon of gas, more dollars to buy food. And I read something interesting yesterday about how companies are cutting back, or they're changing the packaging. So since they have higher costs due to inflation, which is entirely, inflation is entirely a monetary phenomenon caused by massive increases of the money supply. It's not just rising prices. Well, why do the prices rise? What is the source of the rising prices? Because businessmen just decide to raise prices on a whim? Hardly. They want to compete. They want to offer the best product at the best price, or the lousiest product at the best price. But businessmen and labor unions don't print money. They don't control the money supply. They may lobby for lower interest rates, which is a tragic thing, which caused this mess, because it distorts the whole structure of production. It gives businessmen and consumers the illusion of cheap money. Oh, it's cheap to borrow money now. It's only, you know, very low interest rates. Well, there's a hell to pay for that later on. In fact, I'd say between 2000 and about 2007 or so, almost every week I was getting mail that you are qualified for $5,000 credit here, $20,000 here, $15,000 here, $25,000. I mean, I kept getting this stuff all the time. I tore it up and threw it away. I didn't need to borrow this money. And if I did, I would have borrowed small amounts and I wouldn't have bought it, used it frivolously. I would have paid bills. I would have not bought a new car or new properties or TV sets or clothes. Even today, I'm comfortable financially. I'm in the black, but I'm very worried about the economy, and I've never been one to spend just to be frivolous. And a lot of people did that. And again, low interest rates and all these juicy offers from the banks lured people in. You know, they took the bait. But again, the masses are blaming the bankers, and yes, they are guilty of a lot of this fraud, but this fraud was induced by the Fed. the Federal Reserve System, which is purely a Marxist concept. It's the fifth plank of the 1848 Communist Manifesto, calls for a central bank with monopoly capital issued, state capital. Karl Marx said that a central bank was the jugular vein of the whole country. So it's sort of like the heart. And, you know, the hands are like the banks. So they're all tied in together, but the hands are, you know, tied into, or should I say the brain. And that's the central area that controls these banks, hence central banking. Well, Austrian economics is opposed to central banking. Always has been. We clearly delineate the fact that the source of our problems comes from central banking, comes from the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve has never had its feet held to the fire like it has in the past several years, thanks to the efforts of the Honorable Ron Paul, who is an Austrian economist, who understands the ethics of liberty. And I hope that he will soon announce that he's running for 2012, because I believe, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, that Ron Paul is the only Republican who can beat Obama. Because the other Republicans are all cut from the same statist, big government, pro-war cloth. And most of them are neoconservatives. And if you don't know by now, I'm a staunch opponent of neoconservatism. The neocons, which are also very pro-Zionist, they come from the left. They're big government conservatives. They're pro-war, they're pro-empire, and almost a blind devotion to Israel. And they've also schmoozed Christian Zionists, thanks to Reverend, quote-unquote, John Hagee, and that crowd, especially him, but Pat Robertson, they really implore their Christian flocks to support Israel, hence Christian Zionists. So they're in league with the neocons, the neoconservatives. Most of talk radio is neocons, Fox News. And they even have their tentacles in the Democratic Party. So, and look at Hillary Clinton. She's become quite the hawk, has she not? So this is a large part of the problem. And, of course, they're buddy-buddy, and they're tied into the military-industrial complex. In fact, Israel's Mossad, which is their CIA, and their mantra is, by deception we make war. They're heavily involved and infiltrated in our military and our government, despite all their denial and their being the perpetual victims, which they use the Holocaust continually, suffering from that. That's their that's their calling card, their little trick that they like to use. But, you know, fortunately, a lot of us, especially myself, we see through all that. I see Israel as the main catalyst for all this terrorism that's inflicted and directed against the U.S. They vote together with the U.S. You know, we protect them. They're like as if they're our 51st state, and they're not. And nowhere in the Constitution does it say that we're constantly supposed to support Israel. With all this foreign aid and all these free American-made murder weapons. So I know I'm going to a lot of different topics, but it's all relevant to a lot of what's going on today. This country's broke. Obama signed the biggest military budget ever. The U.S. federal government spends more on defense than all the other major countries combined spend on defense. Has it made us safer? Huh. Has it made our economy stronger? No, because it's diverted so much precious investment capital from the private sector, who needs it, to the military-industrial complex, congressional complex, and they're all feeding off the tax trough for the most part. Yes, there are private companies producing this stuff, but they all have government contracts. And as I've always mentioned before, yes, we need a defense. It's in the Constitution. I'm down with that. But we don't need an empire. And I'm always bickering with some friends about this or neocons about this. And, you know, every time I mention the Constitution doesn't allow it, they just poo-paw it. They they shrug it off. You know, they make excuses like, well, we're at war and this or that, you know, and they think it's okay to sidestep the Constitution. Yet you hear these politicians and the Republican, so-called Republican leaders and contenders for the presidential race talk about constitutional values and how they support the Constitution. Well, when you really call them on it or throw it in their face, you know, it's a fraud. They're false. So Donald Trump is probably going to run. I don't care for him as a politician. Well, he's not a politician. I don't care for his views. I heard a lot of them yesterday. And unfortunately, Donald Trump, like so many businessmen, they're not good in economics. And he wants to browbeat China and other countries instead of looking at the reasons why they're producing more or outproducing us. He wants to blame them from currency manipulation and stealing our jobs. Well, a lot of businessmen have reinvested overseas because of the tax structure over here and all the ridiculous regulations over here. Who can blame him for leaving? So the chickens have come home to roost. And by the way, on 9/11, I said the chickens have come home to roost. And by that, of course, I meant that because of U.S. foreign policy, the federal government has caused this mess. Well, after studying it further, I look at who did 9/11 benefit the most. And for me, it's clearly Israel, whom I believe was behind this. People say the Jews. Well, I don't say the Jews. I say Zionists and I say Mossad, which is Israel's CIA and probably some rogue elements of our CIA. A small clique pulled this off, just as some of those same elements most likely had a lot to do with the Murray bombing in Oklahoma. So these are their ways to get Americans who are fearful and jumpy anyway more frightened about what's going on, and it worked like a charm because Israel wants a greater territory. They want more help in murdering and ethnically cleansing their neighbors. So that's how I see it. And you won't hear this on mainstream media, or when you do, they poo-paw it and they call you anti-Semitic. But I would have some staunch anti-Zionist Jews in my corner if I ever got to debate this crowd. But, you know, they don't want to debate. It's easier to call names. Oh, you're anti-Semitic. You're a hater. All this sort of stuff. So, as far as 9/11, that's what I see. And, of course, this ties in today too, because of 9/11, we have more massive military spending for these greedy bastards. And look what it's done to our country. You know, as I will continue saying tirelessly, the warfare state, America's federal warfare state, is bankrupting our country just as much as the welfare state. So I might have a call coming in, and I'm looking forward to that. But this is something I will say all the time, folks. I'm very consistent about this. I won't back down from it. It is the reason that we have the mess that we're in. And the entitlement spending, it's out of control. It needs to be reformed. Obama's $1 trillion that he's, you know, that he's added more to more debt is just, you know, it's mind-boggling. And for the Republicans who can only find $38 billion to cut last week, well, let's go back to what PK's said before consistently. I would abolish many federal bureaucracies and all of those employees and bureaucrats who lost their jobs, I would give them their full pay and benefits for 1 year and sell off all those bureaucracies. Every state already has a Department of Education, Department of Transportation, Department of Agriculture. We don't need to be paying for all these federal ones. We would save billions. And even so-called smaller things like the liberals like to talk about their sacred NPR, Well, that's not in the Constitution to have NPR. How did we survive before that? And they say, well, and they also talk about, well, foreign aid, there's not that much spent on foreign aid. I don't know if there's, perhaps there's less than $10 billion spent a year on foreign aid. Well, you add up all these things, it comes into multi-billions, probably over $100 billion, all these different little things. They all add up, and they're not necessary. They're not constitutional. And for all those, probably especially modern liberals who want these institutions, like Planned Parenthood or NPR, let them spend their own money. But no, you know, modern liberals are willing to give away everything they don't own. And I'm not a conservative. I'm a libertarian. I'm a libertarian Republican or a Republican libertarian. I'm a Ron Paul Republican. In fact, I agree with Ron Paul on practically everything except abortion. I think it's a necessary evil. And the best solution that I know of for the abortion battle or situation is that abortion remains legal. I'm a first trimester kind of guy. It remains legal with never one penny of taxes spent on abortions, and there are no late-term abortions. Now, the liberals may wet their pants about this, but hey, they're free to fund Planned Parenthood. They're free to send donations to abortion clinics. You know, the abortion clinics in my type of society will remain legal. They will remain open, protected. But taxpayers, especially those who abhor abortion or are against it, will always know that not even one penny of their taxes ever went to an abortion. Same thing for tobacco. I don't like tobacco. Ugh. Never smoked. Don't like it. I wouldn't ban it, but I certainly wouldn't subsidize it. You know, on one hand, you've got government subsidizing tobacco growers. And on the other hand, you have government telling us, oh, you shouldn't smoke. They don't, you know, this campaign against smoking, which brings up some more wars since America, or actually the federal government, is so fond of war. Please tell me, multitudes of listeners, as far as these other wars that Washington has been up to for years, some over 40 years, tell me which ones of these we have won. Tell me which of these wars that Washington has won. The same Washington, D.C., that continues to throw billions and trillions down a government rat hole. Tell me, listeners, have we won the war on crime? Have we won the war on poverty? Have we won the war on those evil drugs? Have we won the war on tobacco? And even more lately, have we won the war on obesity? And of course, terrorism. Have we won the war on terrorism? Are we winning the war on terrorism? Or better yet, in terms of terrorism, can anyone please tell me just exactly who or what's Army, Navy, or Air Force is there for us to fight and defeat? And just exactly who will surrender? That's what I'd like to know. And everyone I've ever debated on this, they don't have an answer. You know, they try to shrug it off. Well, that's not an answer. Atlas shrugged, but they can't. So I'm typing away here. So that's what I'm curious about. Who's gonna surrender? Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, opium production is at an all-time high. And, of course, the CIA has a hand in that. Just like the CIA was involved in heroin in Southeast Asia during LBJ's instigated civil war in Vietnam, which led to the deaths of almost 60,000 U.S. GIs. And then I read a couple weeks ago, and this is really tragic, I didn't know the numbers were this high. Over 100,000 Vietnam veterans have committed suicide. The number is, I've heard, closer to 150,000, but I say just, you know, over 100,000, so I'm, you know, sort of within a more of a, you know, comfortable zone there. So, I mean, that's really a shame. I never knew that, and I wish the whole country knew that. I mean, most of the country still doesn't know that on 9/11, there were three buildings that collapsed, besides the Twin Towers, which were pulverized. You had World Trade Center building number 7, which is a 47-story tall building, which collapsed in its own footprint at 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11. Wasn't struck by a plane, had some fire damage, but, you know, no steel buildings have ever collapsed like that one has, or the Twin Towers. And they were pulverized. They just weren't collapsed. So, you know, I know we spoke about this last week with the great Jim Fetzer. I, however, think that that there was thermite involved. There could have been mini nukes, especially Israeli mini nukes. Or there's also some laser technology or this other high-tech stuff that the military-industrial complex is up to, or the feds or Israel's Mossad. So that's where I think the culprits lie, the way this happened, the way they were just pulverized like they were. I don't even think that World Trade Center Building 7, as far as I know, I don't think it was even pulverized like the Twin Towers were. I know that the Murray Building wasn't pulverized like that. But it's interesting when you see the footage that day of the buildings collapsing and the Twin Towers collapsing, you see down below firemen on the phone. And after the towers had already been hit, and you hear massive bombs going out in the basement of the buildings. So I'm convinced there was other stuff going around. And, you know, of course, they like to call people conspiracy nuts, but, you know, I find that ridiculous. I'd love to see a new investigation of this, but not under government control, independent investigation. I'd like to see Alex Jones on it. I'd like to see Jim Fetzer, several other prominent people, some European engineers and scientists, you know. Oh, by the way, folks, if call-in number, if you care to call in here and speak to the great PK, that's me. Numbers are 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. And incidentally, nobody's figured out what my initials stand for, PK. No one, free of sarcasm and any inferences like that, have come up with it. But I'll give you a clue. It's deep, as I am, royal and majestic. So that's PK. I'm still waiting for somebody to figure out what those initials stand for. No one would have the audacity to refer them to themselves as PK. But I do, and I'm still waiting for someone to figure out what it stands for. Oh, by the way, have I said hello to my friend Richard in Thailand? Richard's a fan of mine and a good guy, and he's hooked me up. President Killa. My producer's written President Killa. What is that, President? Is that a slang, President Killa? Oh, it's a slang. Okay. It's a joke. Oh, okay. Okay. You know, here I thought I would do the jokes. Okay. But anyway, where were we? Oh, let's talk some more about Atlas Shrugged. Folks, you got to go see the movie. I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to part two and part three. I don't know if they've started production yet. I don't know if they've, when it will start. I hope they'll have the same good cast of characters. I hope it happens soon because, as they say, shit happens. So any of those characters could become ill or deceased. So I hope they'll jump on it. But I thought it, and I haven't read the book for years, but it, you know, started coming back to me. I thought it was portrayed quite well. I mean, that's no easy feat to write a screenplay for Atlas Shrugged. And, you know, it's intense. And it sort of swiftly showed the downfall of the economy and society as politicians and bureaucrats scramble to quote-unquote fix things, the same mess we're in today. Stimulus packages don't work. TARP doesn't work. Bailouts don't work. They've made it much worse. And they subsidize the same rich people who helped cause this mess. So I don't see it getting any better. I see it getting a lot worse before it gets better. And if Obama's reelected and gives us more of the same medicine, oh no. Who knows? I just see more unemployment, more despair. As far as green jobs, this whole green thing, yes, I'm for a cleaner environment, but they're trying to push this on us through government control and government selection of profitable industries, and they haven't created a lot of jobs with it. It has to come on its own through the marketplace, through entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are what drive society and what should drive society. We need more businessmen and developers like Henry Ford, Frank Lloyd Wright, Berry Gordy, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, the Beatles, people who produce things, people who produce wealth, which not only gets them wealth, but it causes other people to become more better off and wealthy. Do you think that a peasant in a country without a truck can be as productive as somebody with a truck in a more prosperous country? You know, it's as simple as that in many ways. So, and I wasn't taught this stuff in school, in high school, or even in business classes in college. I learned this, you know, later on by especially reading libertarian literature and becoming self-educated. And when I came across Austrian economics, thanks to Ayn Rand, by the way, it opened up a whole new world for me, and I understood how the world works more clearly, and I understood economics more. I'm not excusing my ignorance in math and science, but Austrian economics is not all about math and, you know, Keynesian economics with its mathematical problems and mathematical formulas to supposedly explain economics to us, when economics is really the study of human action. It's grounded in human choice because human beings make choices. They act, unlike an inventory on a shelf. And the way I discovered Austrian economics is through, once again, through Ayn Rand. Now, I'm sort of unique. Well, I'm unique in many ways, but I'm unique in the fact that I discovered Ayn Rand or started reading Ayn Rand through her non-fictional works. I read her non-fictional stuff first, starting with The Virtue of Selfishness, which I greatly recommend. It's kind of deep. It's not easy reading, but once you grasp it, it's you know, it's a mind opener. And I certainly advocate people reading that book probably first off. And I read For the New Intellectual. But my favorite Rand book happens to be a non-fiction book, is Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal. And I take issue with a few things, like she doesn't, you know, when she's critical of hippies and this and that, she doesn't mention hardly enough the effects the Vietnam War had on society and the young people. And I'm not totally down with her big business is persecuted. I'm, in agreement with completely they're overregulated and overtaxed as are individuals, as are small business. But when I read Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal, it really opened up things. It helped me clarify things, because I was always pro-capitalistic and pro-free enterprise and pro-free market, but I couldn't explain it as clearly as I could after reading Rand and, of course, reading Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal. Now, the big thing about Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal is that I came across these quotes in there who were attributed to Ludwig von Mises. And every time I came across a quote by Mises and read that quote, it just was so clear. It was like a door opened up, and there was a brand new drum set, for those of you who know I'm a drummer. It was like a door opened up, and I said, yes. And I thought, who is this Ludwig von Mises? I never heard of this guy. At the time, I was more pro Milton Friedman. But after I discovered Mises in Austrian economics, there was no turning back. I sort of turned my back on Friedman, especially in terms of monetary policy. He's a Keynesian, and he believes in the Fed. He didn't respect the gold standard. Friedman was good on trade, especially good on explaining trade. But, I got to fault that guy. He created the withholding tax during World War II so the feds could steal their money a lot quicker. And as I understand it, the federal income tax was only supposed to be a temporary measure. But it's still with us here after the war, which confuses me a little bit because, as clever as I am, I'm not exactly sure about this. They've been saying lately, conservatives on talk radio and this and that, that like only half the country pays taxes or half the workforce pays taxes. Well, even lower income people or the working poor, aren't they still subject to withholding taxes? Maybe they don't pay much in income tax, but aren't they paying FICA and, all these other taxes? So I would think that they're still paying some in taxes. So that is something I need to know more about. I'd also like to clear up something. I wonder what health care was for our seniors, say, before 1965. What was it like before they instituted and forced Medicaid on us or Medicare? I hadn't heard stories growing up about, pensioners or senior citizens out on the street or doing without. I think the system worked fairly well, but then the feds got into it and they mandated this or that. They made it, huge government interference, set up huge bureaucracies. I'm thinking that's probably what happened. And also in terms of healthcare, and especially in terms of cancer, I've become a big fan and disciple now for over 20 years of a brilliant American scientist that most doctors have never heard of, most Americans have never heard of. But his name was Royal Raymond Rife, R-I-F-E. And he invented technology back in the 30s and the 40s where he was treating cancers. He developed the most highly developed microscope of its day, the most powerful. And his microscope, unlike the microscopes of their day or the electronic microscopes, electrons, his microscopes didn't destroy viruses and bacteria. So he was able to see them in their living state. So you should look into Royal Raymond Rife, R-I-F-E. What a brilliant man. And I think he came from the Midwest, Kansas or somewhere like that, and he set up shop in near San Diego. And, of course, lo and behold, the feds paid him a visit, and he wouldn't sell his technology to them. So, gee, what happens? Shortly after that, his lab is broken into, fires set, equipment smashed, records stolen. So a lot of tragic things happen to people in American history that we don't even know about. And I tell you, it is so wonderful not to have the shackles of illogical or misguided patriotism afflicted on me, because I'm not a partisan of either party. I am a Ron Paul Republican, but that sets me apart from the other two status quo parties. So I'm free to criticize and make comments that even people who agree with me, especially in academia, would be uncomfortable making or would shy away from because of their positions or they don't want to be held into controversy. I'm looking forward to it. I would love to clash with the status quo neocons. I would love to clash with Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, this whole crowd. But I would like to clash in a format where they couldn't just, all right, we go to next caller where they shut me off. I would like to have them say on this show where damn it, they're on this show for almost an hour and they ain't going to be go away and they're going to have to deal with PK because PK will not back down. And the thing about where I'm coming from, which includes Austrian economics, revisionist history, and the ethics of liberty, is that, damn it, folks, we've got the truth on our side. And the greatest friend of truth is time. And sometimes it takes time to uncover facts that are missing. That's what revisionism does. Revisionism strives to bring history into accord with the facts. And, of course, it breeds resentment. And some people are angry at it, at revisionism, because, well, they were taught differently in school. They grew up with their mindset, thinking that, you know, America right or wrong, sort of, and this and that, or we Americans, you know, would never do such things. Well, that's why I don't like to say we or America. I always prefer to say the federal government, because that way I clearly implicate where the problem is. So I wouldn't apologize for America like His Highness Obama supposedly does. I would apologize for what the federal government has done to the world and to our own people and to our own country. And the federal government is out of control. I saw that clown, what's his name, Frank Dunce yesterday. He always does his little things out in the crowd getting people's opinions, and he wanted just a very brief few words about Obama or the country. And had I been there, I would have said with a smile and a cheerful tone, secession now. That's what I would have said, secession now. But back to time being the greatest friend of truth, it reminds me of that great old saying that truth passes through three stages. And I see that Ron Paul is going through this, probably me and other Ron Paul Republicans and the libertarians. And that is that truth, again, truth passes through three stages: ridicule, opposition, self-evident. So let them ridicule Ron Paul. Let them ridicule our side, because the empire's cracking and the house is crumbling. And I am never going to back down from saying I/we told you so. And the reason we know this is because we know Austrian economics. I don't have a crystal ball. Ron Paul doesn't have a crystal ball. The Mises Institute does not have a crystal ball. We have Austrian economics. We understand the Austrian theory of the trade cycle, which in a nutshell shows and proves that central banks manipulate the interest rate by lowering interest rates primarily, and they cause a credit expansion. And the people who get the new money first, the cheap new money first, use it and spend it before prices rise through inflation. And this can take several years for this cycle to happen. And we're in it now. And so we told you so, folks. The best thing they can do is get behind Ron Paul, because there's not – I don't believe there's a Republican who can beat Obama. And Ron Paul, the Ron Paul wing – of the Republican Party, that is the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, is where the Republican Party should be. And ironically and humorously enough, I would not be opposed to a one-party state if it maintained the principles of liberty, property, and peace, self-defense, armed neutrality, micro-taxes, micro-regulations. If we always went down this path of social tolerance, promoting personal responsibility, a one party that had its ideals of a very strictly limited constitution that respected and protected individual rights, I could see a sort of a quote-unquote one-party state. And I don't mean this at all as a dictator or an authoritarian, because a strictly limited constitutional republic would, dare I say, dictate the conditions of society. And, of course, it would be subject to change by law, but, you know, there are certain principles that should remain, which are, you know, sound money, the role of the entrepreneur in society, no barriers to market entry, you know. So America's just gone down such a bad path towards crony capitalism. And now Obama's sneaky little speech where, you know, he implies that there's going to have to be $1 trillion of taxes raised. Well, you know, there's not enough rich people in the country. Or there's not enough people who make over $200,000 in the country to pay enough taxes to get close to covering these massive deficits, this massive spending. You know, it's like every family household lives beyond their means by, let's say, 1,000%. How long could you survive that way? Yet America, the supposedly greatest country in the world, I keep hearing all the time, best place to live. Well, this country has a lot of business schools, and they teach accounting and finance and economics. And you mean to tell me these politicians and these idiot politicians and bureaucrats, they're not educated enough to manage better than they are? My great late grandfather, I say great late because he wasn't my late great. He was not my great-grandfather. He was my grandfather. My great-late-grandfather used to say, like 35 years ago, that the government is the worst manager of anything. And he used to say, let them go broke, especially when he was talking about, if you recall, back in 1975, I believe, that New York City was going broke and they wanted a federal bailout. Some people said they should just declare it a foreign country, cut them loose, and give them foreign aid. But my grandpa used to say, let them go broke until they learn how to manage money. And that is the solution for governments and state governments. You know, until they learn how to manage money, bankruptcy is a good alternative, because that should shock them into getting it together. And, of course, the sacred public employee unions have got a lot of legislatures and budgets held hostage because, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of these people in most states, and they've got these lavish pensions. Well, you know, how are we going to afford that? Meanwhile, you don't have this crisis in the private sector, you know. So, and there's damn too many government employees. I was reading where there's like more government employees now than there are people in manufacturing. I mean, people, when you have more people who get paid from taxes than people who pay those taxes from the productive part of society. Yes, politicians, bureaucrats pay taxes, but they're not business owners. I mean, this is scary. Now, we could see this in our lifetime. And, you know, I fear, I've said it before, I fear civil war between the haves and the have-nots. And a lot of today's have-nots are regular working folks, be they blue-collar or white-collar people who have no job. So, you know, I, that's what I sort of fear, a civil war between the haves or the have-nots. And I also fear food riots, or civil war through food riots. So I encourage people to have weapons to be armed so they can defend their homes and families and their property and their stored food supply, because it could come to that. And now, as I predicted, you know, the Border Patrol is using these wonderful drones, you know, the drones that are murdering people in undeclared wars in Pakistan. Those drones are being used for border surveillance, fair enough, but you can't tell me that they won't soon find their way into domestic so-called law enforcement. I mean, the federal government is just out of control, and it's, you know, it's got the states addicted, so they're all going to have more of their militaristic toys. The police have become more militarized, and mark my words, in fact, audience, I'll bet your lives on it that these drones become frequently and popularly used by police departments within our counties and our states as we go towards further towards a corporate fascist state, and they have detention centers, which they say are going to be used for illegal aliens. But, you know, you'll see. So at least Jesse Ventura's on the ball about this. He's got this new book, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to know about. So, you know, the real enemy is the federal government, is Washington, D.C. And as I'm fond of saying, secession is good. Secession rights is right. Secession works. So as I get towards the end of my show, I hope to have Karen Kwiatkowski on next week, as I mentioned earlier in the show. And also I met a young fellow who was recently down at Gitmo. He's a civilian. He was down there on business, and he got himself in a little bit of trouble in the sense that he was asking on a tour. He was asking questions that, you know, the tour guide didn't like, and some of the people with him didn't like, some of which were veterans. Ooh, they didn't like. Well, he didn't like hearing the truth, what he had to say. And this young fella doesn't seem to be a leftist or sorts, but I'm going to have him on in a week or so, if Karen doesn't make it next week. I'll have him on, and you should hear his what he has to say about Gitmo and the number of troops and support staff and contractors there. I think there's just over 200 prisoners there, and there's about, you know, I don't know if it's 8 or 10 to 1 soldiers and support staff to each prisoner. So it's quite a boondoggle. So my producers tell me it's time to rap. Well, you know, I don't rap, and I don't do hip-hop either. But I will get to the closing of my show. I'd like to thank you all again for listening to me go on my little rants, but I think I've got good things to say, and I hope you took it in and you understand where I'm coming from, because it affects all of you and all of us. And, you know, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, Obama is a disaster. And any of these Republicans who want to challenge him, they're pretty much lame, too. They'll just keep us involved in more wars and more spending. So as I say goodbye, this is your wonderful host, your wonderful humble host, PK, signing off and saying thanks again for listening. And I look forward to chatting with you and with a new guest next week here at Third Stream View, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, 12 a.m. Eastern. Until then, good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.